The Athletic. Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast about a life following Watford Football Club, brought to you by The Athletic. My name is John and I am joined after Watford drew for the only the second time this season, but also the second time against Newcastle. Away it was 1-1 and I'm joined by Colin.
Good afternoon. Happy Watford Day.
Isn't it amazing how we can be so positive and happy over a draw? But that's just, I think it's the order of goals and when they happen. We'll get to it. And of course, Jason's here as well.
Yeah, good evening.
Because it's been hyped, and I'm really using that word properly. I'm not a football fan. You know, this morning on the WhatsApp group, Dave was just going to pull his hair out, and Mike was thinking it was all going to go to hell. Everything was going to be terrible. I was excited, I think, more than anything, because that's how I am as a football fan, to see what happens. I'm not, you know, we're not going to lose before the game starts, for me at least. And we know it's this big, important week with this game against Newcastle, probably a game against Burnley, and then a game at home against Norwich in 6 days. It's a big week. I'm not saying it's season defining, but let's just deal with that first game, shall we? Colin, Claudio's choices. We saw six changes. Two of them fairly obvious in terms of the attack, with King and Dennis coming back. Foster in goal, we'll get to him a bit later on. And of course, some new boys as well. All three new signings, all three made their debuts and they started. Where was Claudio, do you think, before this game? I know where we were, and the nerves for some and the not nerves for others, the excitement for me. Where do you reckon he was? How was he approaching this game? And what do you think he was saying before the kickoff in that changing room?
Well, I think he probably was saying all the things he's been saying to the media. One of the things about Claudio, which obviously we see the happy, smiling Italian kind of sort of almost comic figure at times, but we know underneath that there is a bit of steel. There's real competitiveness, because you don't have the career he's had unless you're incredibly competitive. You know, when you meet footballers, I mean, and coaches, they want to win everything, where they're playing tiddlywinks with their kids. God help their kids if they ever get into a game of Uno with their professional father footballer or their professional coach footballer. Because so I think we know that underneath that facade is a steely individual with a competitive edge. And I've really enjoyed listening to him over the past couple of weeks, because he's been saying, this is a good squad. These are good players. They're not showing it, but these, you know, they're not doing as well as they could be doing. But when I watch training, I see them train. I see how good they are. I see how good they are together. I know what they can achieve. And interestingly, he said it in his post-match interview today. You know, are you happy with the one? He said, no, I'm not happy. I'm not happy because we only played our football for the last 30 minutes. We are better. They are better. They've lost six in a row. They're low on confidence, he was saying. But I know what they can achieve. So I suspect that's kind of what he was saying in the dressing room, on the plane up to Newcastle, coach, whatever, all week. You are better than these results. We need to work together. You need to fight for each other. You need to do all the things that football teams need to do in order to get results, including trying not to concede a goal, being tougher to break down, which I think we were. And I suspect that was his take. You're better than your results. You're a good squad. You're good players. You're in the middle of your careers, most of them. And come on to the new boys a bit later. But putting them in, bringing Foster back, crucial. Just picking, fundamentally, I would say at this moment, probably his strongest side, apart from Kiko, who probably is not quite ready to play 90 minutes, although he did come on late in the game.
Jason, think about it though. You know, Colin's right. I'm sure he's in there being his experienced manager in front of them all and saying, you can do it, guys. But what do you think he actually said to them? Did he say, go out there, keep it tight, don't be fancy, just go and... Yeah, don't let them score in that first half, because it was, I mean, I'm sure to the neutral, and listening to it for a section of it, I had to on Five Live. It wasn't a glamorous game at all, especially that first half.
No, it was your typical relegation six-pointer. Well, that lacked a lot of quality, didn't it? type of game. There was lots of giving the ball away, both from our point of view, from Newcastle's point of view. And yeah, not much to write home about in the quality department, as I say. What would he have said to them? I think you're right. I think he probably would have been, keep it tight, keep the crowd quiet, because we know that the Newcastle fans can get on their players' back. We saw that at the final whistle. When the final whistle went, there were boos ringing around St James's Park. They certainly weren't happy with a 1-0 draw. So Claudio would have known that. He'd have got that onto the players. Let's frustrate them. Let's stop them from making anything happen. We know the quality that they'd have out wide, with St Maximin on one side, with Trippier putting crosses into the box on the other side. Cut off the supply. If it does come in, keep it tight in the middle. I think we could see that Chris Wood was tightly marked. So I'm sure it would have been, don't let him get a sniff. Don't let him get off to a good start in his Newcastle career. If you stop them from creating anything, if you stop them from scoring, the crowd will get on their back. The players will start to feel that frustration, and then we can grow into the game more.
Because I really hated the game at home to them, because they clearly went there with the plan of, we're just going to, the debutant referee, I think it was at the time in the Premier League, we're going to target him. That's our game plan. We're going to just make the game mucky and dirty. And I think they definitely, they weren't quite that, but like I say, low quality sides, Jason. They had chances. None of them were really threatening. They always feel worse, don't they, as a football fan, when you're against your team. Like, they were at least 5-10 centimetres closer than they really were. Then at half time, we went in. I couldn't really say either way who was better, who was worse. Both worse, really. Again, half time though, Colin, did you think he changed it up? Because that second half, we were the more, well, after their goal, we were in control of that game. Do you think it took at half time he would have said that? Or do you think we only made changes once we went behind?
Well, I think he would have been pretty angry at half-time. I mean, it was clear we tried to play on the counter. And in the first half, where we had very little possession, they threw the kitchen sink at us a little bit. From where I was sitting, they were playing a bit like a cross between Bournemouth, plenty of ex-Bournemouth players on the pitch as well, by the way, including on our team, but like a cross between Bournemouth and Burnley. That's what I mean, and if that's your plan to get out of the relegation zone, you know, they I think they're going to struggle. Their plan was simply get it onto the right-hand side, get Trippier to cross it into the box. They must have crossed it into the box in the first half, I don't know, over a dozen times. And our defenders were able to defend well. Even the very biased chap who I was listening to on my laptop, who was saying that Newcastle were all marvellous and Watford looked terrible, he did in the end say, they are defending the high ball pretty well, Watford, and we did. So that first half, it looked like containment and hit on the break. And we had a few little nibbles, sort of kind of half breaks where it looked like something might develop and then it didn't. Half-time came along, and I suspect he was quite cross, Claudio. He has got a temper on him, so they say. Because if that was his plan, that's fine. But we did let them come down the sides a great deal. We did let them pump balls into the box. We weren't great at cutting off the supply.
But we did that against Spurs, though, didn't we? We let them come at us, and we dealt with it.
Yeah, we did. And it looked a bit like we were playing Spurs. And I don't mind it when we're playing Spurs or City or Chelsea or something. You sort of think, OK, well, that's fair dues. But we're playing a team. OK, we're away from home. And I understand that dynamic. And they came out with a lot more energy. They were much more intense in the tackle, in the press. They wanted the ball. They wanted to get ahead in the game. And we stopped them doing that, which is to our credit, because it's not something we've been doing all that often in first halves. We've often conceded. So it was good. I think he probably thought, right, I need to put a bit of energy, you know, and a bit of more belief. So I expect he just reiterated the message that he's been pumping out to the media. And in the second half, the goal came and then everything sort of changed. And it was partly to do with them, I think. They scored and, you know, like all teams, they spent 5 or 6 minutes trying to get the second goal. And then they started to think, oh, hold on. And they started to drop off us a little bit and their intensity dropped, partly, I guess, because they were starting to get tired. Then I think Sam Maximin went off with a knock that he had. He tried to stay on and couldn't and came off. And suddenly it just felt like the tide turned. And what's really interesting, John, So if you look at the stats, and I'm not particularly, you know, mad about stats, but in the first half, we ended up with about 32% possession. By the end of the game, we had 48%. So you can see what happened in the second half. We dominated possession. We dominated chances. We ended up outshooting them in terms of numbers of shots. We outdid them on shots on target. So we were clearly the dominant side in the second half. Fortunately, we got the rewards for that.
Jace, where were the improvements for you? Do you think it was just a thinking forward thing? Let's just think a bit more attacking. Or did you see particular players who stood out? I mean, the goal from St Maximin was just, you know, a moment really for Newcastle. They didn't, you know, do anything else that first half, the second half. What else for you? That period before we scored, that's quite a long time really, wasn't it? Because it was right at the end of the game. You know, when we did score the goal, it felt deserved. What was happening in that period where we deserved it?
And just to come back to your point on the, you sort of mentioned St Maximin's goal as well. You're right. I talked about the lack of quality in the game, and it's one of those where you feel a moment could potentially win it, and that nearly did. And Gakia, he'll probably be annoyed with himself for his involvement in the goal. Unfortunate, because up to that point, I thought Gakia had coped well down that side with St Maximin, and Joe Linton was sort of playing wide when Newcastle were going forward to support him as well. And it was, yeah, it would have been a tough battle out there for Jeremy, and he coped pretty well until the goal. From that point onwards, I think, like Colin said, it's as much Newcastle as much us. I thought where we struggled in the first half, and where, as Colin said, we struggled for possession, was because Newcastle were happy to press as high. Again, as has happened in other games, we don't seem to be able to cope with that. We're sort of hurried into making passes that aren't there, or we'll just hoof the ball there. There was one point in the first half where I think we'd got a free kick. I think we had the opportunity to take it quickly and play it forward. We didn't. We slowed the game down. We ended up going all the way back to Foster, and then Foster just launched it back onto a Newcastle head. And it's sort of things like that that were quite frustrating in the first half.
Yeah.
Whereas in the second half, as soon as they scored, they're then thinking, oh, we could win this, we got a chance. They get a bit nervous, they start to drop deeper and deeper, and all of a sudden we've got time on the ball, and we're sort of able to look up and pick our passes rather than sort of being hurried into passes. And that kind of played into our hands as well, I think. But we still sort of had that element of sort of the counter-attack. There was one particular moment that stood out for me, one of the new guys with, I think it was Kayembe, had picked the ball up. He had space to drive forward that he probably really didn't get in the first half. So he had the opportunity to move forward with the ball, and then played a lovely ball into the channel for Joshua King, who touched, I think it was his second touch, let him down somewhat and sort of took the ball away from him, and Dubravka was able to come out and make the save. But I think it was just the space afforded to us allowed us to play our football. And it almost sort of comes back to, we're sort of talking about when our last win was the Man United home game, where again we were allowed to play our football. So it's almost like we need the nervousness and sort of confidence missing from the opposition to allow us to then sort of get on top and control the games. And that's probably what happens when you're a team you're down near the bottom in the relegation sort of battle. You're not going to be controlling the game and able to play your game unless you're up against someone who is struggling and lacking confidence themselves. So that was it for me. Not maybe a positive for Watford, but negative from the opposition.
Comparing those two games, like you just said there, the Man United win and today, if we are going to stay up and we're going to get the wins we want, there are going to be occasions where a weaker team or a team faltering, or, you know, that opportunity to come up, when we have to take the opportunities when they are there. I think the win so far this season that's exactly what we've done. Today feels a little bit less like, oh, could we have got a little bit more from it? Or is it just the circumstance that we find ourselves in with new players and, you know, the players at the AFCON and unrest and not really having a recent good run of games to build upon this squad? But, you know, there were other opportunities. Sissoko had just the best opportunity. I don't say he should have scored. I'm just saying, Musa, you should have at least got it on target. And like I say, Josh King, He should have done.
He should have scored. I mean, you know, he's a professional World Cup winner, professional footballer. He's put it on a plate for him, and he side foots it about 3 yards wide. I don't know how he did it. He cannot shoot, that man. He just cannot shoot. It's just not in the locker.
Okay, well, definitely not putting him up front then. But we did get the goal. We got the goal after the Kiko substitution, Colin, for an Joao Pedro beautiful sky leap above the Newcastle players to gently touch it down and into the back of the net. At least that's what it felt like, and especially at 86 minutes, it really felt like it was only a draw, but it was a goal that got us that draw, and it was an amazing feeling, such a weight lifted off in that moment. But let's talk particularly about Joao Pedro. He had that was a beautiful goal that we know he's got. And we know more of them are coming, don't we, Cole?
I think we do. I said, I think last week, that we're seeing... I mean, I love that kid, by the way. And I know a lot of Watford fans do. I don't know what it is about him. He's charismatic. He likes to tackle. Today, there was a bit of a scuffle and he ran 30 yards to put in his tuppence worth, you know, and protect his mate. I think it was with Dennis. He was getting hassled and they'd been a coming together, whatever. And he runs across and starts, you know, giving it the old chin, you know, up in the face of the opposition. So we love all that. But it was interesting where I was watching it. They were saying what good feet he's got and that when he gets in the box, he's very tricky and he's very hard to stop. I thought it wasn't far off one of his best performances, I think. He was a bright spark in the first half, one of the few. And then in the second half, he just keeps going. And, you know, for a player to want that header that much, that shows a lot about his competitive spirit, his determination, his character, his fitness. You know, he's not small. I mean, when I watched shots of him in Fluminense, I thought he was kind of going to be quite, you know, like a, not a Gianfranco Zola, but, you know, 5'8", 5'9". He turns up, he's 6'2". He's put on, I think he said he put on 7 kilograms when we dropped down into the championship because he knew it was going to be more physical. I just think he's becoming one of those slightly sort of iconic cult players that doesn't do it all the time. And let's not forget, he's still very young. But that moment was a Joao Pedro moment. It was a brilliant cross from Kiko. I mean, it was really a very good cross. I think it was Lascelles, possibly, that he had to get to. He had to get to the ball first. But it's interesting when you listen to people who are not Watford fans. So I was watching after the game. I was watching Sky Sports News, and Merson was saying, what a brilliant goal it was, because it looks like a regulation header. Then he just got there first, but he's saying he put his head in there. That was a dangerous place to stick your head. You can get stitches. You could get your skull fractured. We've seen it before. But he doesn't. He's going to put his head in there. He's going to get that goal for his team. This is a brilliant, brilliant goal. He really talked it up at the same time as saying how poor he thought Newcastle were, how few shots they had, how Wood didn't really impress him, didn't really have a great debut. But he couldn't stop talking about this Pedro goal. And I sort of thought, God, was it really that good? And then you look at it again and you think, yeah. I mean, he got up, he got his head in where it needed to be. You know, some players don't want to do that. They think, I'm just going to get hurt here. I don't want to get smacked in the head by the keeper's, you know, with the keeper punch, trying to punch the ball, or the defender sort of whacking me. But he doesn't care. He's that competitive. He wants that ball. There's a bit of Deeney in him. Remember Deeney at Villa going up for a ball that no one else seemed to want to go up for and scored a goal. You know, we saw Dennis score one against Norwich in similar circumstances. He cut inside the defender, got there first, heads it in from another Kiko cross. And so we really, really deserved it. I didn't think it was coming. I couldn't see it, really. I thought they were going to see the game out. But then this one moment of real quality from Kiko and real determination from that young lad. And yeah, it felt like a win. I kind of thought there was like seven minutes to go. I thought we might do a Brentford here. Mm-hmm. I could see us getting into the box, maybe getting a pen, you know, because they were panicking by that stage, Newcastle. They were looking really like, oh God, you know, we can't lose this game.
Oh, and so did Mr. Eddie Howe. He looked like a scared little child all of a sudden. He was like, oh my God, what's happened?
He did.
What are we doing?
He looked grey, ashen face.
Yes, he really did.
Haunted. All the words I've used all week about him. I think he is out of his depth. I don't think he knows how to get a really good performance. They haven't had a really good performance, Newcastle, for a while. And you know, this whole thing about their fans deserving all this chance with all this money and that they're the best fans. Once again, they proved that they're not the best fans in the Premier League. You know, when we got we were being beaten 6-0 in the FA Cup final, the whole of the Watford end waved their flags and sang songs. When Leeds were getting beaten by Manchester City, was it, or Liverpool, they all stood up in Elland Road and sang Bielsa's name. But today, you know, they turned on the team. They booed them at the end. And you think, That's not good. That's not what you need when you're in trouble. And I think Watford fans, you know, however anxious we feel, however miserable we feel sometimes, or, you know, frustrated, I think we rarely boo our team. We always seem to get behind them. And, you know, you could hear the Watford fans on the telly. You could hear them singing.
Yeah,
and it was just great to hear that. You can hear them. They're like they're in another county, obviously, because they're up in that top deck. But, you know, and that's what we've got to cling on to. And also, it was interesting because, again, from an objective position, Merson was saying, I think Watford will stay up. And they're going, well, it's 3 from 4. You know, it's going to be new. He said, I don't think so. He said, I think Watford are the team that might stay up. They brought these defensive players in. They all had good, they had very good games. And they've got this kind of pace and determination up front. He said, to come back when you're in a relegation threatened position against one of your relegation rivals, you're 1-0 down, it's 86 minutes. To have that, to make that effort to score that goal is a really good sign. He said, he thinks we're going to stay up. I'm not sure there's many that do, but it was interesting to hear him say that.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
From the Rookery End, a podcast about life following Watford FC.
I can already see it, boys, on the WhatsApp group. Mike, the misery guts that he is, trying to find the bad in this.
Yeah,
positive.
Just give, when he said, I told you months ago, we're going to finish 20th,
yeah.
I almost wrote, just give it a rest, Mike. Just give it a rest. We're all being tortured here in front of our laptops, you know. We don't need that. Just stop.
He's always at his worst during a game. He's always at his worst during a game. We'll speak to him at some point and see where he's at. But the big thing, I suppose, out of this, why I think we're not absolutely humming and doing our thing quite yet, because we had lots of changes. We had six changes today. Three of those were new boys, Jason. Overall, you know, we were hoping and dreaming of this switch to come on when these new players turn up and it to be perfect. Of course, we know we're adults. That doesn't happen. How do they do overall for you as the fact that the three new players and in terms of an impact they made on that squad?
Yeah, I think they did pretty well, all things considered. I said last week, didn't I, that I thought it would be Roy the Rovers to expect them all to come in and things to sort of change miraculously. But actually, we weren't that far off, were we? In reality, we got a point away from home with the three guys in. And like I said, there were six changes in all from the last game. Yeah, I think pleased with the debuts for all of them. I think if I had to pick one as an early standout, that was Kamara. I thought he did well. Not played any football, I think, since, was it early November?
Yeah.
I thought he looked, obviously playing sort of left back, but looked calm and composed on the ball, moving forward as well. Pretty solid defensively. Again, would have had a hard time up against sort of the Trippier Fraser combination down there. Not just the excellent crosses coming in, but all the tricks and games that Fraser was going to be playing with his old mucker Eddie Howe looking after him again. Yeah, I was quite pleased with his debut. Samir looked pretty solid. I think him and Cathcart worked well as a combination. Obviously, when you're playing as a centre-back, you need the pairing to work well, and they seem to work well together, particularly looking after Wood. I thought they did a good job of handling him all game. I think he was sort of closely marked and didn't get much of a sniff throughout. It was only sort of right at the end when he got the wrong side of Samir that Samir had to take the yellow card for the team. But again, that could have been tiredness towards the end of the game. And Kayembe as well, I think I'd mentioned him already, looked effective enough sort of in the first half. And then, as I say, second half seemed to come out more with the ball at his feet. And as I say, that pass to King, I thought it was a great ball down the channel. And we'll have more of that, please, if you're playing in that number six role that has been so dearly missing without Luder in the side, as Colin has explained very eloquently in past.
Ad infinitum, yeah. I'd go further than Jason, John. I'd say without those three, we wouldn't have won that game. Listen to me. We wouldn't have got a point from that game. We'd have lost that game.
Do you mean if we had Messina, Rose and Toufan?
Well, if Toufan had played and Kuchka and Sissoko had come further back, which is what we've seen recently, Rose at left back, obviously no Messina, and then Serralta alongside Cathcart, we would have lost. And I'm not
who was the most important one of those, though, out of those
Kayembe,
three?
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Because you went all last week, we need a number six, we need a number six.
Well, I know, and I did bang on about it, but he is clearly a number six.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a defensive midfielder. That is his meat and drink. You could see it in his attitude, the way he plays players, the way he tracks runners, the way he sniffs a little bit of danger here and there. He picked up and intercepted a lot of balls. I don't know the stats on that, but he looked to be busy. He looked to be in control of himself when he got the ball. He kind of, you could see that he knew what he was wanting to do with it. He was passing it out to Kamara. And then as Jason quite rightly points out in the second half, when he got a bit more space, he's like, oh, you're going to give me this much space. I'm going to bring the ball over the halfway line. I'm going to start putting a bit more pressure on you. Another body in your half. What are you going to do about that? The other thing about the three of them, I think they were all, I mean, Samir is a big lad and he's clearly not frightened of a scrap. It'll be interesting to see how he does when we play against a team with a kind of like West Ham with Bowen or Koufal, you know, smaller players who are quick feet, getting around you. Today he was faced with one big centre forward. That was it. He didn't really, that was all they had to deal with. They didn't really have anyone else getting into those positions. So I thought he did well and he took a few knocks and, you know, welcome to the Premier League. And Kamara, I agree with Jason. He looked composed. He looks like he knows what he's doing. The other thing, though, about these three players coming in, and let's not forget, obviously, Foster came back, and that was, for me, absolutely crucial because as Bachmann's form has dropped, in my opinion, over the past few months, you know, when Foster comes in, you just feel more confident. But yeah, the most important thing about those three players is that what they've done is they've come in, they've played their first game together, all of them. We've got the point. And the other players in the squad go, well, I think we've got a chance now, lads. It will give the squad so much confidence to have those three players come in and play well. It will also give the three of them confidence that the coach has brought them in and plays them straight away, doesn't stick them on the bench. Well, let's just wait and see how they get on. Yeah. You know, he's put them in, he's put his trust in them, and they've come through. Very difficult first game in the Premier League for all of them after none of them have played any football for weeks. We think that maybe Kamara might have tweaked his hammy, but it might have just been cramp. The other two seem to come through it all right. I can't see them all three playing on Tuesday if that game goes ahead, and then again on Friday, because I think you're just asking for trouble if you do that. But who knows? If they're fit enough, then let them play. But I think that, you know, it's interesting that people criticise the Potsos a lot, John, and I don't know if you agree with this. They say things like, oh, their recruitment isn't as good as everyone told us it was going to be. We've had a lot of, you know, we've had a lot of bad signings and so on. But what their scouting network can do, and actually Newcastle is a good comparison to Watford. It was clear as soon as January the 1st came along that we needed a centre-back, a left-back and a holding midfielder, because our left-back and holding midfielder were going off to AFCON, as was one of our centre-backs, although that's a different issue with Truce to Kong. Yes, Serralta had come back. We were looking thin in those areas and we were still conceding bucketfuls of goals. So what do they do? By the 4th or 5th of January, they've got a left-back, a centre-back and a defensive midfielder. Kayembe took a bit longer, but you know, he arrived a week ago or something like that. So that's what they can do, the Potsers. They won't always be successful. The players won't always hit the ground running and be good Premier League style players, because obviously most of them have never played in the Premier League when they arrive at Watford. We don't very often buy players with Premier League experience. You put Dennis in that, put Saar in that department. Okay, King does, Gosling does, but mostly we buy players who don't have Premier League experience, but they got them in. Newcastle, on the other hand, all the money in the world, they buy a very good player in Trippier. There's no doubt he looked like their best player all afternoon. But apart from that, they've gone and bought a I mean, a centre forward who scored 3 goals this season for a team that's also in real danger. So you think what they needed clearly was a striker. They needed a centre-back, and they haven't filled those, and a central midfielder, and they haven't filled those positions. But Watford needed a centre-back, a left-back, and they filled them straight away like that, bang, within a couple of days. And that is why the Pozzos are doing everything they can to keep us up. It's why they're such good owners. We are a small club. We have a small budget. You know, all our money goes on wages. We know that, and we can't compete now with a team like Newcastle. We can't spend 30 million quid on a player. We've got to find players for 4, 5, 6, 10 million maybe. They've just done really well. If these 3 players stay fit and we stay up, hats off, chapeau.
Yeah, I mean, I think my favourite thing about these is that they all came in and they all performed, and they didn't seem like they were... Yeah, they weren't a fish out of water. They fitted in, and it's not... Which, please do not make it sound like I'm being superly, you know, positive about this. It was a draw. It was great. But you want to make sure this game, more than anything for me, had to be a stepping stone. And it really feels like it's a stepping stone back to where we need to start being, and then the next stepping stone to being what we hope this Watford team can be. It was interesting, I think, for me, looking at that lineup, would they play? But then seeing that Samir played, who would play next to him? And Cathcart was definitely picked. For me, it feels like he was picked just to being that more senior, cooler, calmer head. Siwata is still sort of finding his way a little bit. We have seen some good stuff, but it's not just quite there yet for him in the Premier League. So I think it's absolutely right that he made those 2 choices. And it was fantastic to sort of see those, you know, we mentioned Foster as well, other players that sort of came back into the team. We mentioned King. We touched on Dennis a little bit there, Jason. He didn't... It's weird, like, when a player like him, particularly forwards, I think we do it as football fans a lot, where you think, oh, he didn't have a good game. Well, basically, that means he didn't score as much as he scored in a previous game, or did as much. There was certainly a little bit of a lack of energy from him today, even though he did make some chances.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if you believe what was said in the press, he had to face a late fitness test before the decision was made on whether to pick him today. And there's been a lot of focus, a lot of attention on him. You would imagine that wouldn't have gone unnoticed in the Newcastle camp. They were paying him close attention. But he did have his moments where, I think there were, first half there was one where some quick feet got him past 2 defenders. When he did get into good positions, a couple of the balls that he put across the box perhaps didn't find their target, sort of played behind players. Second half, went on that run that led to that Sissoko chance that we've already mentioned. For a while I was thinking he could have released, I think it was King going down the left hand side, I thought he could have released him, was worried he kept the ball too long, but actually then Sissoko was in a better position, so it was the right ball to play, so he I think he got that right. Had those opportunities come off, then we'd probably be saying he had a great game. Today, yeah, perhaps not, obviously not his best game, not a performance he'll be writing home about, but nothing to be worried about, I don't think, at this point. And I'm sure he'll come good again in future games.
The cool, calm head of Ben Foster in goal is welcomed. Thank you. Kiko, though, Colin, always hard to sort of... We have been not critical of him, but being aware of his limitations. You know, he came on late on in the game, was able to add that energy at that point. Do you feel, though, do you have a choice between him and Ngakia, or is it quite interchangeable who starts at that right back?
No, not for me. I don't think it's interchangeable. I think Kiko is a much better player than Ngakia at this time in Ngakia's career. I think Kiko has struggles because he runs so much, but he's the one player at the club that can cross a ball with a fair amount of consistency, and he does like to get into those advanced positions, which means he's doing a lot of running because he's obviously got to get back and help out as a right back. But for me, I think he has been injured a couple of times this season. Is that right? He came off in a game at home with a hamstring, so he's come back. They're looking after him. They also, if that's right about Dennis, they substituted Dennis, which caused a bit of a shock on the BT Sport score goal program. They were like, why are they taking off their best goal scorer? It's like, well, if he had a late fitness test, you got 84 minutes out of him. He didn't have a brilliant game, but, you know, let's not risk him for the last 10 minutes. And they brought on Cucho. So that was a surprise. And then obviously the other way around was that yes, Ngakia was a bit at fault for the goal, but to be fair, really, it was a brilliant individual effort from Sam Axeman. I don't think we can really blame him for the goal as such. But, you know, and maybe he is young and you know, I can't remember what happened at Brentford. We were 1-0 up and obviously, you know, so whether or not he's quite got that mental strength. But so to bring on Kiko after 66 minutes is just it's just wonderful, and it just does inject so much sort of new energy into the team. And actually they couldn't get to him, and he was able to get that cross in, and earlier in the game they probably would have got to him and blocked it, but they couldn't because he was just too quick, too determined, and the cross was a perfect one. So I like to see him, if I may, and I don't want to bring, you know, the mockers to this one all draw. The one player I feel that I'm not getting at the moment is Kuchka. I'm not really sure what his role is. He's not a Barami. So Valon Barami was a firefighter. He ran and ran and ran, and he just shut players down, shut down supply, got tackles in, got booked every game. Sometimes he got sent off. That was his role. And there were, you know, that was our first season in the Premier League for however many, 10 years, nearly 9 years. And he came into the team and he did that job, and alongside Watson, and it allowed us to be difficult to play against.
But, do you not think it's the fact that Cleverley has been injured? And we've got 3 games in 6 days. If he is injured, and he isn't sprightly, so we need to control that injury, control the you know, bringing Cleverley back. Because, like you say, he isn't firing, and he isn't the player that we all hoped he was going to be after that Aston Villa game. But Cleverley would be ahead of him, guaranteed. Guaranteed. So it can only be because of injury or coming back from injury why he's starting at the moment.
Yes, I suppose that's right. Now Kiembe's there, it seems like maybe Kuchka is a defensive player. You know, he is effectively a defensive player. He's not really a creative player. He can get up in the box and score a header. He's done that once this season. So he is a physical presence. And you would have thought in a game like this, a dogfight in the bottom three, bottom four, that would suit Kuchka, and he would show his qualities, his battling qualities, his kind of, you know, and try to get control of that midfield. Because as Mike says on the WhatsApp group, we haven't controlled a midfield really apart from against Man United, maybe against Villa, but I can't remember so long ago. But today he just hardly heard his name mentioned. He didn't seem to really do anything. Sissoko's doing a lot of the heavy lifting in that midfield, I think, and doing well, and he's a quality player. Kiembe was very clear about his job, and he did it well. Protect the back four, recycle the ball, so on. Keep calm, don't just boot it. But Kuchka just seems like, he just doesn't seem to, I'm not quite sure what he's doing and what he's been told to do and why he's not doing it and what his role is. And I do think that, maybe you're right, maybe if Cleverley is 100% fit, but he's never 100% fit, seems to me. He's always got little niggles.
There is that.
That you would start Kiembe, Sissoko and Cleverley. But we need to find options, because it's just not, for me personally, and other people will disagree, I'm sure, Kuchka just looks like a piece of the jigsaw, a bit like Tufan has over the past few weeks. You think, what are you doing? What's your role? What's your job? Why aren't you just not in the game? And we can't afford that. We need 11 players on the pitch, all firing, if we're going to get out of this mess.
To say on Kuchka, for me, it always seems like he's chasing the game and always trying to catch up. And sometimes he does well when he then does that chasing, does that harrying, wins a ball back somewhere. But then his passing really has been not at the level it needs to be for a Premier League player. You sort of question, I think Cleverley was involved for the goal, wasn't he? Where he's gone over to help Kiko. I think it was a 1-2, played Kiko in and the cross comes in. You then sort of say, one, would Kuchka have been there on the pitch to be involved in that goal? And two, would he have been able to make that pass? And for me, probably the answer is no to both. And I think, again, yeah, that's why for me, it's Cleverley over Kuchka in that position.
It was a draw. It was just a draw, but it was a step. And we've got plenty to hopefully see in the next week as Watford take on Burnley, hopefully, on Tuesday, and then Norwich next Friday. It's a long way to go. It might be an important week, but there's a long way to go.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Part of the Athletic Podcast Network. This is From the Rookery End.
Colin, AFCON is on. Several Watford players there. Of course, we know the two you've also sort of hinted to them already. Messina and Loser are playing for the Morocco, who have qualified for the next round now. And today, 3-1 win for Nigeria means they're through also to the next round. And Troostekong and, of course, Okoye, the goalkeeper.
I'm not sure how you say his name, actually. The goalkeeper, yeah.
Yeah, the goalkeeper for Nigeria.
He looks good.
Yeah, and he's what are you taking from the Watford players you've seen so far in AFCON?
Well, the two games I've watched fully were the Morocco games, because I have, as everyone knows, I've got quite a long association with Morocco. I lived there when I was a teenager, on and off for 2 or 3 years, because my mum was working there. And I love Morocco, and I still go quite regularly. And yeah, they're quite a good outfit, and they're one of the favourites. But what's been really interesting, Messina's been doing fine at left back. You know, he's just been playing at left back as he does for us. He's reasonably solid. He looks good in that tournament. The games are being played at a snail's pace because I think it is really hot, and I think players, even though they're in mid-season, they've suddenly all had to fly to Cameroon, and within about 3 days they're playing their first match. So it's not been easy because they delayed. Didn't they? Certainly the Premier League delayed. They're supposed to go on the 27th, I think, of December. And then They said, oh, no, it's OK. They can play the game on New Year and then go. So they didn't fly out till like the 3rd. They mostly went to their home country and then flew on to Cameroon. So they've had very little preparation. The games haven't been great, but I'm sure the quality will improve as the tournament goes on. The interesting thing for us as Watford fans is that Imran Loser, instead of playing in the famous number six role, which he has been seen, that's kind of how we thought he was brought to our club, a defensive midfielder, very good, comfortable on the ball. For Morocco, he's playing where Cleverley plays for us. He's playing ahead of, maybe they've just got a better defensive midfielder than him, I don't know, or more experienced one, because I obviously don't know the intricacies of the Moroccan setup. But he is playing in the creative role, in a playmaker role, really, like a number 10. And I watched both games, and in both games he was substituted after about 70 minutes. But he was really Morocco's most influential player, playing in that forward role. So looking forward, and going back to this talk about Kuchka cleverly, maybe with Kiyembe bedding in over the next few weeks and making that role his own, maybe there will be a role for Loser further up the pitch, because he certainly seems capable of playing there. I mean, they were playing the Comoros Islands, so that's not really, it's not really fair to judge him on that, because the Comoros Islands is one of the smallest teams, you know, one of the lowest ranked teams in the world. So, I mean, they've done amazingly well to get to the tournament, and but he was effective. He was passing well. He was getting into advanced areas. He was helping Boufal, you know, get on the ball, create chances for him and so on. So that's interesting. I mean, one thing's for certain, John, I don't think we're going to see any of our boys back anytime soon, because it looks like, you know, it could be a Nigeria-Morocco final. Obviously, Cameroon are in there, Senegal, Ghana have got some good players. But it's just a great tournament. And we were on the WhatsApp group this week, and Mike was going, I'd love to go to that tournament. And I'm thinking, yeah, so would I. It's just the colour, the noise, the singing, and there's a kind of crazy element to it as well. There was a thing with the referee who got heat stroke and blew the whistle after 85 minutes, and then he blew it again on 89 minutes, and then they just all went off the pitch, and then the organisers came in, the Tunisian manager was giving a press conference, they said, you've got to go back on the pitch. He went, no, I'm not going back on the pitch. So they gave the win to Mali. The Malian players had to go out onto the pitch and wait for 2 minutes. You know, so there's a kind of mad element to it, which some people are very rude about, which I don't really get. I mean, I just think, you know, there are issues there. Oh, if they want to be taken seriously, why do they run such chaotic tournaments? It's just part of, I think it's part of the culture of AFCON. They always seem to have these funny, slightly mad moments. I think it's organised at the last minute. It's very difficult to organise a tournament like this in the middle of the European football season. It's not ideal, and this is the last one, so we're never going to have this issue again. They're always going to play them in the summer. I don't know how, because it's boiling hot in sub-Saharan Africa. But it's been fun to watch. It's been fun to watch Loser playing. He's clearly very respected in that camp. He's given a lot of responsibility, even though he's still quite young. And he's looking good, and I'm looking forward to seeing Morocco go deep into the tournament, hopefully.
Jason, you don't feel so bad that after today, with a Loser not being coming back?
No, with KMB obviously putting in a great debut, it is only one say great, a good debut. It was only one game, so there's a lot more for us to get through, a lot more games to get through with the guys out at the tournament, and for our new players to settle in. But I am generally a lot happier now than I was with a few minutes to go when St Maximin was being applauded off the pitch as the apparent match winner, and being congratulated by Eddie Bloody Howe. So so generally, yes.
Is that his actual name?
That is his name. So generally, yes, I am happy. Thank you.
Good. And you know, I think you're like me, Jace. We're not over hyping up the whole week in itself. If we lost today and lost on Tuesday and we lost on Friday, it isn't the end of our season. That won't be until at least May. But let's do the cliche, Jace. One game at a time. What's happening in the next game for you on Tuesday, probably, hopefully, against Burnley?
Is the game happening? Do we know?
It is at the moment, Colin. It is at the moment. But imagine it. Let's play the game where a football match isn't cancelled for once. What do you think, though, about this game? How would you change things? Would you change things? Is there much you can change?
I wouldn't want to change things. I think I'd like to keep things as they are. Maybe, as Colin said, Kiko in for Ngakia, although Ngakia, as I say, had a decent game other than the goal. For me, this one was the toughest of the three. I thought this was going to be the most difficult. I think Burnley, who knows where they are. Them not playing games, I don't think, is helping them at all, because today they'll have seen Norwich win. Obviously, both ourselves and Newcastle have picked up a point apiece while they're sat inside watching all this happening. Not good for them at all. Will they want the game to go ahead on Tuesday if they're just coming back from COVID and without Maxwell Cornet as well? I think they still need it to happen so that they can start to try and build something and build some momentum in a game that, again, they will see as an opportunity to pick up points. For us, I'm getting splinters in my bum deciding as to whether I want it to happen on Tuesday
like
or not.
That, Jason, because yes.
on the positive side, Burnley, they're not in a good place, are they? And this could, and especially after today, picking up a point late on, like in the way that we did, that would have injected a whole amount of positivity into the side, and will probably be to have the next game come so quickly is probably a good thing. To have all three games in a week, these big games in a week, and sort of in 6 days at that, sort of the Saturday to Friday, or say 7 days, Saturday to Friday, puts a lot of strain on the squad. We've seen these new players come in and do well. We talked about Kamara. Was he feeling his hammy at the end? His first game for a couple of months at least. Will he be up to the rigours of playing three games in a week? Not having the game might help us. Ultimately, if it happens, at the moment, I'm feeling positive. I'll be a bag of nerves come Tuesday evening, but at the moment, I'm feeling positive with the side we had out today. Maybe a change with Kiko on the right, but let's go for it, guys. I think we've got a chance there. I think we've got a chance to pick up some points again with Burnley being in such a bad place.
Yeah, they're five games behind Manchester City and Manchester and Chelsea, who have both played 22. I mean, we are right. We've played 19. We've still got three games to make up, including that game. But they do need to get on and play some of these games of football that make up the season. Colin, you going?
Well, yes.
Excellent. On the coach again.
The rule is that if you go to a game that's postponed, you absolutely have to 100% go to the rearranged fixture, I was told by my friends. So I booked a ticket. But I tell you one thing, Joe, I'm not getting on that coach at 11:30 in the morning unless I know for certain that game is being played. I'm not going to go there twice and not see a game of football. I'm actually quite excited about going. I think I do like an away trip. I like the coach, as I said on the podcast. It's so essential, the club coaches. They've been going for probably 70-odd years now. I don't know when they were started, those team buses, you know, sharabangs going all over the country. And obviously we had the special trains and everything. You're a Watford fan for the whole day because you are surrounded by Watford fans all day. On the coach, breakfast before the coach, on the coach, at the cricket club next door to Turf Moor, at the game, back in the cricket club, back on the all day long. You are nothing else but a Watford fan. So for that, I'm excited. I'm excited that Wood isn't playing for them anymore. We haven't got a brilliant record against Burnley, I don't think. I mean, they've always bullied us and got late goals. And you know, and I remember when I went there with Florence when Ziegler got sent off, and we conceded within about a minute of him being sent off and couldn't quite get back in the game. I think Maps had a chance. So it'll be nice to go there. No Cornet, no Wood. Those have been their two big threats, particularly Cornet. We'll definitely be buoyed by this draw. The new lads will feel like, okay, so the Premier League is tough, but I think I can cope with it, even though I've never seen it or played in it before. I think I've done okay. The coach will be full of pumping them full of confidence. I'd personally like to see Cleverley start. So in this game, we started with more defensive players, Kuchka and Ngakia, and brought on Kiko and Cleverley. I'd like to see us start Kiko and Cleverley and really get at them like we did against Chelsea, like we did against Man United, and get an advantage, take the wind out of their sails, not be reactive, be proactive. And if Claudio Ranieri does really believe that his squad is good enough and he does have confidence in them, then he should push that confidence into the squad by picking an attacking side and saying, go out there and attack them. They're at a low point. They haven't got their best strikers. Let's go and let's destroy them and win this game. And if it's 1-0 with 10 minutes to go, okay, I'll make some changes, bring some more players on, pack them in the middle of the field, whatever, that's fine. But I want to go out and be aggressive to begin with. Not go out and go, well, it's Burnley, it's going to be physical. Let's sit tight. Let's keep it contained. Let's bring Kuchka back alongside Kiyembe. Let's keep it narrow. Let's not let them bully us and then try and nick it later on. I don't really want to see that. If he believes in them that as much as he says he is, then put him out there to win the game. Play Cleverley, play Kiko. Let's get at them. Let's press them. Let's be intense. Let's score goals because we know we can do that. And they haven't got a record of scoring many goals. Let's keep a clean sheet. Let's win the game and get on the bus and come home.
Do that with an Italian accent, Colin. You're Claudio Ranieri, and we're winning that game of football. I like it.
40 points, 40 points. Boys, 40 points. We just need a 40 point.
It's like Claudio's in the room.
Hardly.
Thank you very much, Colin.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll be back with another podcast called Midweek, hopefully after the Burnley game, if it does go ahead. Of course, Adam will be here. Thank you to everyone who got involved with the live room podcast thing that we did on Thursday evening. It was great having you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, John. It was excellent.
Yeah, so we will be doing more of those via the Athletic app. Remember, everyone could listen to that, but if you're a subscriber, you were able to get involved and give your views as part of the show, as a caller, as that we sort of called you, even though it wasn't technically a telephone. Anyway, yeah, if you want to be part of one of those in the future, you can do it by becoming a subscriber. Go to theathletic.com/rookeryend and you can sign up there with the current offer. I think it's a third off at the moment. There's always a special offer for you as a listener to From the Rookery End. The big story, Rich WFC, you've been obsessed with this story about Pap Gay. Someone who Watford announced as signing for us during that lockdown period, and he never turned up, and he's playing at Marseille. But it looks like there's been lots going on. Adam's been following it, but it all came to a head, I think, yesterday with some punishments for him and Marseille. But we'll get all that. That's what the Thursday podcast is all about. Adam is in touch with all what's going on in that side of Watford, and you can get all that on a Thursday morning, unless of course we do a live programme on a Thursday evening. But that's our podcast that comes out, so please make sure you listen to that one, as well as of course this weekend podcast that we do. We talk about the game, and of course we talk about life as a fan of Watford Football Club. A draw is a draw. It's a step to a win, and 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 seven more, and we'll be fine. We'll be absolutely fine. Come on, you horns.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.